Balance of Nature's fruit and veggie capsules contain 100% fine ripened fruits and vegetables, tested pure with no pesticides, fillers, or additives of any kind, and are the most effective whole food supplements on the market today. You might ask, how can over 10 servings of 31 different fruits and vegetables fit into 6 vegetarian capsules? Fruits and vegetables are on an average 85% water. Balance of Nature uses cold vacuum technology to remove the water, leaving only the whole food. We don't use any heat, air, or light drying methods that damage nutrients. Our cold vacuum technology maintains 99% of the fresh fruits and vegetables' original nutritional value. Along with diet and exercise, Mother Nature provides fruits and vegetables to help us maintain good health.
To order, go to balanceofnature.com or call 1-800-246-8751. That's 1-800-246-8751.
Use the special promo code PODCAST.
For me, it's kind of every stereotype you would associate with kind of your standard American pro-lifer. I grew up evangelical Christian. We did the baby bottle boomerang where I tried to collect loose change to raise money for crisis pregnancy centers.
In a culture as politically polarized and aggressively tribalized as ours, how do people change their minds? I'm Georgie Borman, a mother, author, and cultural commentator born and raised on the West Coast. I want to know what we can learn from people who've been on both sides of contentious issues, whether they end up on the right or the left. That's what this podcast is about. Welcome to the 180 Cast.
How is it not violent for the state to put a gun to my head and say, you have to carry this child to term?
Hello and welcome back to the 180 Cast, where we have civil and eye-opening discussions with people who have changed their minds. I really meant what I said in my intro. If you end up on the opposite side of me on something, I still want to hear from you. In fact, I want to hear from you maybe even a little bit more, because that is valuable insight. And not only does it help me just connect with other people who are different from me, just human to human, but it gives me a little bit of insight into, well, maybe there are some things that I need to change my perspective on, or some things that I haven't considered that other people are thinking about that I'm not. So, as I told Jeff Perlman, who may possibly be my new favorite liberal, and I feel like I can say that because Jeff's probably not going to listen to this podcast. But what I told him the other day was agreeableness, or like just the ability to sit down with someone and work out your differences, or just like air your differences or agree to disagree. It's like a muscle. You use it or you lose it. So today we're going to use it. If you follow my writing or even just my Twitter feed, my stance on abortion is pretty clear. I'm basically a straight up abolitionist, and I spend probably way more time than I care for criticizing even other pro-lifers for their philosophical inconsistency than doing the standard evangelical pro-life messaging. And it's not my favorite thing to do. But anyway, just to give you an idea, if you don't follow my writing or my Twitter or whatever, that's kind of like, that is how far to the right I am on this issue. But our next guest is not on my side of the fence. Kathy Reisenwitz writes a blog called Sex in the State and also blogs passionately about land use policy. She is a columnist for the Bay City Beacon and has written for numerous publications, including Newsweek, Forbes, and The Daily Beast. Kathy, thank you so much for like being brave enough to come on the podcast with me.
Thank you for having me on, Georgie. I think this is a great idea for a podcast.
Me too. Yeah. So I definitely meant what I said. This isn't me, just pitching hard balls at you. But before we jump in, I'll just briefly mention how we connected. I put out a question on Twitter after fruitlessly trying to search for people like you, asking if anybody knew of someone who went from being pro-life to being more on the pro-choice side of things. And I think Liz Wolf, who is one of the editors at The Federalist, retweeted it. And I think that's the one that you saw and you responded. And you're like, hey, that's me. And so Liz introduced us and said, basically were polar opposites, at least on social issues, and told us to, quote, go forth and make a dope podcast. So that's what we're going to do. My standard for dopeness will be like, is it as dope as Kyler Murray's pink suit that he wore at the NFL draft? And that's a pretty high bar.
So, yeah. Liz is a great lady, so I'll try to make it dope for her.
Yes, she is a great lady. Liz, if you're listening, we will do our best. Okay, so so you used to be pro-life or call yourself pro-life or something along those lines. Can you take me, like, what is your story? What did you used to think and what did you used to believe? And, like, why did you used to believe that? And then we can talk about why you changed your mind.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's kind of every stereotype you would associate with kind of your standard American pro-lifer. I grew up evangelical Christian, particularly Southern Baptist in Alabama. And, you know, we did the baby bottle boomerang where I took an empty baby bottle to my high school and, like, tried to collect loose change to raise money for those crisis pregnancy centers that help encourage women to not abort their babies. And yeah, I mean, I was, you know, I don't think I ever marched for life, but I was, you know, part of that whole scene and believed that very strongly. And I was against abortion being legal. And yeah, I, you know, this is obviously my evolution on the abortion question is part of my larger evolution, kind of away from evangelical Christianity. But I would say that one thing that I would say the biggest thing that changed for me is just kind of, I started to read new things. I started to listen to different people. I think when you grow up, or when I grew up in the church and kind of on the right side of the aisle on most things, you know, if you're reading Drudge Report and you're reading Fox News, you don't encounter a lot of nuance on the topic, and you don't read about a lot of the stories that I've read in the intervening years that have really changed my perspective on the issue. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you are young, I was, you know, in high school and college at the time, I never had sex before, and I wasn't really taught, like, I went to a Baptist college as well, so, you know, a lot of my friends weren't having sex either, and so to me, it was just a very clear-cut issue. Like, don't have sex before you get married. And then if you get pregnant, like, carry the kid to term. And if you're going to have sex and you don't want to have a kid, take birth control, right? Very clear-cut. And then as I got older, I started to learn about, for example, how many women can't take hormonal birth control. I'm actually among them. Like, I can't take the pill because I have a blood clotting disorder. And that's a lot of women are like that. And I read about women who, you know, it's very common in abusive relationships for men to compromise birth control. So they'll poke holes in condoms, they'll hide birth control pills. They'll very strongly encourage women to, you know, compromise their own birth control in order to trap these women in these relationships. And so, you know, things are just more complicated out in the real world. And that's doubly so. So that's true for avoiding pregnancy. But then the realm of pregnancy is also very complicated. So, for example, you know, in countries with very severe restrictions on abortion, like in Ireland, they had reform on their abortion laws when, you know, a 30-something mother bled to death just totally unnecessarily because their doctors wouldn't perform a late-term abortion. That was, you know, the kid was definitely going to die. The mom obviously was going to die, but they just let her bleed out because of abortion laws. And if you look at, like, Latin American countries where abortion is illegal, you know, they'll put women in prison for miscarrying because it's a very difficult thing for a woman to prove that she had a miscarriage as opposed to an abortion, especially if she's, you know, poor, unwed, or in any kind of situation of vulnerability. So it's you don't hear those stories when you're in that milieu until you kind of get out of it.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned South America, because I was talking to some people about that very issue this morning, and that's actually something that you hear pretty commonly from mainstream pro-lifers, or that I have heard from mainstream pro-lifers in with regard to having abortion be illegal, but not having any penalties for mothers who choose abortion whatsoever. So that's a pretty common thing. I won't totally get into that, but maybe that is something that we can discuss in some other time, in like a post show sort of situation. I just did that with Holly Shear, who I talked to a couple weeks ago, and we did like a post show about anti-vax versus vaccines, and it was really fun. So hopefully if you don't hate me by the end of this, maybe that's something that we can do. Okay, so was there anything that stuck out to you, just like looking back on your evolution on the issue, was there anything that stuck out to you that grabbed your attention, was like, wow, I didn't think about that, you know, because you've mentioned some of these things, but were there like specific articles or people or conversations that you had that really started to get the gears turning?
I can't really think of any specific stories. I mean, definitely reading about women being put in prison for miscarrying was shocking, but that was pretty late in my evolution. I would say that the thing that really changed for me was just, it was empathy. You know, I had empathy for women who are pregnant and who didn't want to be, in a way that I didn't before. Like, I was able to put myself in their shoes in a way that I wasn't able to before. And philosophically for me as well, it's like a lot of people change their minds that way. Most people, in fact, on most topics, their emotions change and then they start rationalizing and gathering facts and kind of, you know, they'll say like, oh, I learned these facts and then I changed my mind, because it was like the more evidence-based viewpoint, and that's usually not true. So, you know, same for me. I think I just started to empathize, and then I started to realize like, hey, you know, I don't believe in prohibition on drugs, for example. I don't believe the state has the right to tell me what I can do with my body. You know, how is it not violent for the state to, you know, put a gun to my head and say, you have to give birth, like you have to carry this child to term. And, you know, I think that whether or not you consider abortion to be ending a human life should dictate your decision. So for me, for example, I do believe it's human life, and I probably wouldn't get an abortion. And I, despite it being a little more difficult, take birth control very seriously for that reason. But other people don't feel that way. And so for me to say that I'm going to impose my view of what this is on you violently via the state isn't in line, in my opinion, with my libertarian principles. And so for me, it's a question of bodily autonomy as well. But that's not what changed my mind. What changed my mind is listening to women and what they've had to go through. You know, it's like imagining being pregnant, not wanting to be pregnant, and the state saying you have to have a doctor shove a wand up your vagina and lie to you about, you know, a medical procedure. It's just like, oh, I would hate to be in that situation. I'd hate to take multiple 17-hour bus rides if I'm a low-income woman to obtain abortion services. Like, these are just things that I would hate to have imposed on me. And then there's just the fact that, like, okay, I think I want fewer abortions. I think most people want fewer abortions. Like, what's the best way to get there? You know, make it easy for people to access effective contraception. And, you know, a lot of these women are, most of the women who get abortions have already had kids. So it's not like they would love, it's not that they don't want to have the kid. It's like, usually they can't afford to have the kid. They're in a place where that's like a realistic option for them. And then Amazon is being sued right now for firing women for being pregnant. So it's like, why don't we set up a situation in which it's feasible for women to become mothers rather than try to force them to carry to term?
Yeah. I appreciate your honesty and your perspective on this as far as empathy, because that is something that I've tried to emphasize on this podcast, is being able to put yourself into somebody else's shoes. And I do find that the people that I have on this podcast, it seems like yourself included, tend to have a much more level-headed and empathetic perspective because they've kind of been on the other side. I don't know if that's because they've changed their mind or because they're the type of person that can change their mind or change their heart on something. So I really appreciate you saying that, because that I do think that that's true, how it works, where we kind of change our feelings on something and then we go investigate and see if we can validate those feelings. I mean, just off of the top of my head, the people I know in my personal life who have taken that approach, I'm sure including myself, if I reflect more on it, that is definitely the way it works.
And I also want to say, I do empathize with pro-life people, like having been one, and having genuinely felt that way. I think it's easy to empathize with a fetus. You know, I think it's a good instinct to want to protect the innocent. I think it's a good instinct to want to protect, you know, what is more innocent than an unborn, you know, what you consider to be a child? I think that's a good thing. It's just kind of an issue of, like, I also used to be against drugs being legal because I saw, like, drugs are ruining people's lives. But there's this whole other aspect of life that I wasn't seeing because it wasn't being presented to me, which is that a lot of times it's not the drugs that are ruining people's lives. It's the prohibition against drugs. It's the war on drugs. And so I think it's similar with abortion. It's like, abortion is bad, but, you know, what are the effects of prohibition? And then how, like, why are people choosing drugs and why are people choosing abortion? And can we reduce the harm that these things are causing through more cooperative means?
Interesting. So have you heard of stork buses?
No.
So the Stork bus, or I think it's called like the Stork Express maybe, they go and they park outside abortion clinics. And of course, the abortion clinics deeply disapprove of this practice. But they actually have like an ultrasound machine on board. And they claim that something like 80% of the people who actually go in and get an ultrasound and hear their baby's heartbeat end up changing their mind and not actually going in to schedule an appointment or going in to actually go through with the procedure. What do you think of that kind of tension, that kind of relationship? Should that be regulated, or should they be allowed to park in front of abortion clinics and do this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the abortion clinic has the property that that is the abortion clinic. I think as long as you're not blocking access to the abortion clinic, you know, you should be able to set up whatever situation you want. I mean, I think that if you are mean to women or you lie to women, then that's being, you know, a butthole and you shouldn't do that, but I don't think it should be illegal. I mean, I think that there are a lot of women who are on the fence, and that those women are probably more likely to go into the stork bus than women who are more dead set on their choice. And that I think, you know, more options, generally speaking, is better than fewer options, and that a lot of women are seeking abortion because they don't see not aborting as a viable option for them. They're worried about losing their jobs. They're worried about being kicked out of their homes. They're worried about how to feed this baby. Like, they've got a lot of very practical and emotional concerns. And so yeah, I absolutely support pro-lifers coming in and saying, I want to make this a more realistic option for you. I want to make this a less life-ending, life-ruining situation for you to carry this kid to term. And so it's, you know, it's a push-pull. Instead of saying you have to carry it to term or go to prison or, you know, do this outside of the legal framework and risk, you know, bleeding out by yourself, let's make this easier for you. You know, that just seems like the most obvious thing in the world.
Yeah. And it does seem like that is like the conventional pro-life approach. Is you see a lot of these crisis pregnancy centers right next door to the abortion clinics. And that's what they're trying to do every day, you know. Some of them are crazy, like weird people who scream and shout and aren't coming from a place of love or empathy at all. But some of them are like, hey, we have resources over here. You know, do you need help? Do you need an ultrasound? Do you need diapers? Do you need help with food and things like that? I think we agree as far as like general economics that more choices is better. But it's like, isn't that, cause you would consider yourself more of a libertarian, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like when your actions start to infringe on the rights of other people, that's where the state can come in, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, murder is probably not something that you'd want to be legal in common.
Yeah. Okay. I see where you're coming from. It's just that you seem to, okay, so you're taking more of the, like, the Joe Biden-esque approach in that people should be free to make up their minds on whether they believe it's a human life that's worthy of protection.
Well, the thing is, you restrict my freedom very little when you say you're not allowed to murder people, but you restrict my freedom a lot when you say you have to carry a baby to term, right? I mean, those are two very different restrictions on freedom. And so even if the value on the one hand is the same, even if you think this is a human life and it deserves to be able to live, you have to think about both sides of the equation. It's how are you restricting the liberty of the person on the other side of it. So we have to protect life and liberty, I think. And I mean, to make an analogy that others have made, it's the difference between you're not allowed to go murder somebody, but if for some reason, like you are in custody of someone who's in a vegetative state, right? A persistent vegetative state, and you're having to pay for their, you know, continuing life support, and you're running out of money. It, you know, it's more akin to saying, I can't be legally obligated to indefinitely pay for this person's life support. To me, that's a more close analogy than walking up to somebody, you know, and just shooting them on the street. It's imposing a cost on your liberty to have to keep this person alive. And it's even worse than that because, you know, this thing is in your body. It's causing you to be ill. It can cause you to lose your job. It can threaten your life. You know, it's just, it's much, much more of a restriction on your liberty and a violation of your bodily autonomy than just someone on life support. And so these are freedoms and rights that are in tension. And so it's a question of, do you think that the blunt, violent instrument of the law is the best way to protect the person on the other end of the question? If you believe it's a person, and a lot of people don't, but even if you believe it's a person, is the violent, forceful, blunt mechanism of law the ideal way to handle that tension? And I've just come to believe it's not.
You mentioned earlier that this evolution was kind of part of your move away from evangelical Christianity. How do those two things relate in your mind? Like, how does this fit into your general transition away from that? I know that's a really like vague question.
No, it's a big question. It's a question a lot of people who like know me well want to understand, and it's something that I'm still trying to work through, to be completely honest with you. I think, you know, to be very frank, like, yeah, I think a lot of people want to know how my evangelical Christianity kind of continues to inform my viewpoints. And I would say that while I do retain a certain amount of faith, that probably does influence my views in certain areas. This is probably one, like, this is probably why at the end of the day, I wouldn't probably get an abortion. But that belief is in tension with the things that I was taught about how to live. I don't believe anymore. For example, my sister, came out of the closet when she was in high school as a lesbian. And I had to confront the things that I had been taught about whether her, you know, being in a relationship was wrong, you know? And so I had to think, like, does it really make sense that God would care, that God would be upset that she would have a fulfilling, loving, committed sexual relationship? Like, why is it that I can have that, but she can't, just because I'm attracted to men and she's attracted to women? Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me. And so I've had to step away from a lot of the things that I was taught about how to live, because I couldn't justify them from a rational, evidence-based perspective. And so it's like, you've got to have really strong faith to say, you know, but this doesn't make sense to me. This doesn't, I'm seeing how this creates some really negative impacts in the world. And I don't have a lot of, you know, evidence to suggest that it's true or helpful, but I'm going to continue to believe it. You know, I couldn't continue to do that. So I think that a lot of people just kind of walk away from faith entirely at that point. But I think I've come to a more deistic view, where I think that I don't know what God thinks about homosexuality. I don't know what God thinks about abortion. I know what the facts are. You know, I know that prohibition leads to more violence, and that prohibition leads to poor health outcomes. And I know that, you know, this believing that homosexuality is wrong has caused like a lot of tension in my family that didn't really need to be there. But that's what I know. So I have to live according to what I know.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, did your church or your community place much emphasis on what the Bible has to say about it, and like explaining that position from scripture? Or was it more like everybody should just understand that this is our opinion?
Yes and no. So it was all very scripture based, but it was all very selectively scripture based, right? I mean, the amount of attention that we paid to homosexuality and sex before marriage and, you know, I don't even know. Those are kind of my focuses. but it was theirs too. Versus like overeating is also a sin, but we never talked about that because the church leaders were fat. And, you know, it's just like, that was inconvenient for them to talk about. I think it
That's
was,
fair point.
Looking back, it was a very culture wars, you know, us against them, the country is, you know, declining into godlessness, and we've got to hold strong. And so, yeah, it was like that. You could always find a verse to back up what you said, because the Bible says a lot of things. But as I got older and started looking into it more empirically, there's also a verse to say the opposite thing for most things that they teach. Like, if you look at the prohibitions on homosexuality, for example, there it's barely talked about in the New Testament, and it's very clearly about not wanting to stand out. Just like, you know, there's a prohibition against women speaking in church. There's, you know, women should cover their heads when they're in church, right? We don't follow that today, because it's clearly a directive aimed at a specific group of people at a specific time for a specific purpose. There's no reason to think that the prohibition on homosexuality, which, by the way, was like operated very differently than it operates today, isn't the same thing. But because it's culturally convenient for the evangelical church to like make this a culture war touch point, you know, that's what they did. So yeah, I mean, it was biblically based, but it was biblically based with an agenda.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. It's funny that Jeff, who I mentioned, is one of my favorite new liberals that I know now. I was on his podcast and he asked me about the Bible, and I basically said in a nutshell, there are a lot of people who like to read Bible verses, but they don't spend nearly enough time studying Bible passages. And it's like you said, it's like things are written to specific people in a specific time and place, and that culture has to be taken into account. And like, you know, the whole of the Bible has to be taken into account. So I kind of appreciate your criticism in that respect. We would disagree on some of the conclusions, but I agree with what you said about gluttony. Nobody ever talks about that in church. Okay. But okay, back to pro-life versus pro-choice. I really appreciate you indulging me on that question, though. I was very curious. What do you think are the worst arguments that you hear from the pro-life side that you're just like, guys, just stop?
That's interesting. I try not to focus on bad arguments because I think it's boring. But I guess I would say that what's triggering to me as like a former evangelical, I guess, is just the lack of nuance. Just the abortion is murder. Abortion stops a beating heart. It's like, yes, and, you know, like, okay, you believe that. What then? You know, what does that cost? What does enforcing that belief cost? They're just not willing to think about and to feel and to empathize with and to be informed on the ramifications of their beliefs. And so I think that abortion is something that I like talking about because it's one of those issues where if you think it's simple, then you're simple. Like, if you think it's simple, you're just ignoring the nuances that actually exist. And that's like a very pleasant place to be. I mean, I liked being an evangelical Christian. I liked being pro-life. I liked feeling like I had the answers and that everyone else was just, you know, ignorant. That's a very pleasant way to live. And I understand why people stay there, but it's boring as well. You know, it's boring and uninformed and dangerous. It's a dangerous way to live, ultimately.
Do you think you can be a pro-lifer and understand all these nuances and still come out on the side of it should be illegal?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course you can. And I respect that. You know, I personally think that it's misogynistic to value a fetus like above grown women's lives that highly. But you know what? People are allowed to value what they value. And people advocate force in all kinds of situations that I don't advocate force. And if you're honest about that, then, you know, people value things differently. And my values aren't inherently better than anyone else's values. That's something that I believe. But I respect it less when they don't acknowledge what trade-offs they're actually making.
What do you think are the worst arguments you see from the pro-choice side?
Again, it comes down to a lack of nuance. You know, this is absolutely not a human life. Like, this is absolutely not a big deal. Like, this is, this is fine for everyone. It is very, I think the pro-lifers make too big a deal about like abortion regret and abortion upsetness. I think a lot of women have abortions and the polling is actually very clear. Like, most women don't regret their abortions. We're very glad to have access to abortion services. But some women do. And even women who don't regret it have negative feelings about it. And so I think, you know, Hillary Clinton, I think, said safe, legal, and rare. And I think a lot of pro-choice people were like, you know, don't stigmatize abortion. Like, why does it have to be rare? And it's like, well, it probably should be rare. You know, we should probably work on making it, you know, unnecessary.
What do you make of that? What do you make of like the whole shout your abortion movement?
Well, I mean, I think it's right that women shouldn't feel like, I think stigma is not helpful, right? It's, if you want women to have fewer abortions, it's a carrot and a stick. Instead of trying to punish women either through the force of law or through shame and stigma, stop with the sticks and start with the carrots. Like, women don't want to be in this position. And there's a difference between saying like abortion is good and I am not ashamed of having, you know, I ended up in a situation through whatever situation, you know, maybe I made mistakes, maybe I didn't, maybe my birth control just failed. And so why should I be ashamed of making the right choice for me at that time? I respect that. I think that's right. And if you want to see fewer abortions, instead of shaming women and stigmatizing women and saying, you know, you were wrong to make this choice, you know, despite having not ever often been in that situation. And that's another thing that I think really changed my perspective is as you get older, as I got older, I started to see where my behavior didn't line up with what I expected it to be. You know, I'd always said, if I were ever in this situation, I would do X or I would do Y. And then I would get in situations and behave totally differently than I thought I did. And I think that, like, something that my mom says is, like, there but for the grace of God go I. You know, I think we all, to get through the day, need to think of ourselves as moral and upright. And, you know, when somebody else cuts you off in traffic, you're like, well, they're a bad driver. But when you cut somebody off in traffic, it's like, oh, well, I made a mistake. You know, that's rare for me. And so... the shout your abortion thing, I think, is like, it's anti-stigma, and anti-stigma is something that I'm pretty passionate about because I felt a lot of stigma growing up about, you know, various things. And, it was kind of a difficult path for me to overcome that stigma. And I just don't think it's very healthy or helpful most of the time. If you want people to make a different choice, a better, more pleasant, more effective way is to making that choice easier. So, like, for example, fat shaming is empirically shown to not only not work, but actually make people more obese. Shaming people for being fat makes them stressed out and lonely, and they eat more, right? So if you want people to be less fat, like, stop subsidizing really fattening foods, right? Like, it's artificially cheap to buy Oreos, and it's much more expensive to buy fresh fruits and vegetables, right?
True.
So work on the incentive system instead of shaming people for, you know, behaving in a way that you might behave too if you were in that situation.
So what do you think, if you had to pick just one line of argument, what do you think, if you had somebody who believes abortion is wrong and should be illegal just sitting across from you right now, like maybe me, you won't be able to convince me, but let's just say maybe, what is the most persuasive argument that you would give in terms of, yeah, we should keep this legal?
I wouldn't. I don't think it comes down to arguments. I would say talk to women, read their stories, listen to them. Women who've been in this situation, listen to a woman who's needed a late-term abortion because her baby was definitely going to die. Like, listen to women who've been forced to give birth against their will. Listen to women who had to procure illegal abortions. Listen to them. And if you still feel like it's worth it, I respect that. You know, that's a choice. But I feel like a lot of pro-lifers, not because they're avoiding these stories, but just because if you stay in the right-wing, conservative, Christian, like, sphere, those stories just don't get surfaced for you. As much as you can, step outside of that kind of echo chamber and listen to women on the other side of the issue who've lived in those circumstances and who have had to make those choices. That would be my advice. So there's no argument that I could possibly make, because there was no argument that changed my mind. It was empathy. It was listening.
I love that answer. I think we've made a dope podcast. What do you think?
I tried.
Thank you so much for joining me today. You know, we're on opposite sides of the fence on this, but there's definitely a lot I can take away from this that is very constructive. And I think the listener will agree. Kathy, where can we follow your work?
I'm on Twitter, and I post everything that I write to Twitter. So that's at Kathy Reisenwitz, that's CathyReisenwitz. I'm going to try to get better about also posting my stuff to my website. That's CathyReisenwitz.com. If you want to, you know, read up on my latest, it's CathyReisenwitz.com/blog. I'm also on Facebook, Kathy Reisenwitz, Instagram, Kathy Reisenwitz. I try to stay easy to find. So I'm also at the Bay City Beacon. It's thebaycitybeacon.com. And this is something that it's just a lot of passionate shouting. It's so rare to have any kind of a conversation about this topic. And it was really wonderful to get the chance to just kind of work through these thoughts out loud. I don't get that opportunity very much. So thank you so much for having me.
All right. If you want to hear the flip side, I interviewed Abby Johnson, the former Planned Parenthood director, in our debut episode. We had a really interesting conversation about exploitation in women's health. And I'm sure that actually Abby and you would find some agreement in some respects. You can check that out on iTunes or SoundCloud or Google Play. And remember, if you're listening and you disagree with Kathy, who is easy to find on the internet because everything is named after her first and last name, please engage politely on social media. If you do engage, don't be a troll because nobody likes trolls. And you can follow the podcast on social media at 180cast. Give us a review on iTunes if you like it. It really helps put this kind of thing in front of more people so more people can be more thoughtful about how they're forming their opinions. And send me your feedback. Let me know about potential 180 stories that we can dive into on the podcast. You can also chat with me on Twitter at Georgie_Borman. That's B-O-O-R-M-A-N. Or follow me. If you just want to be updated on my latest writing, I usually write about once a week for The Federalist. And I opine on numerous subjects, including, but not limited to, the worst trends in swimwear. And I think the front of your swimsuit should not look exactly like the back of your swimsuit. That's just my opinion. Until next time, seek the truth, share your values, and listen with your heart and your mind. God bless.